The politics of Ireland seem rather plain these days. The troubles are over. The turmoil of the gay marriage vote is in the past. Populism doesn't seem to have much of a hold on the place. Two centrist parties rule the country in coalition. But a recent study at the time of the last election found the Irish, to a staggering degree, believe in conspiracy theories. Around 40% of them, almost as many as in the most conspiratorial country in the world, the United States. One of the authors of that study joins us in the studio now to talk about this strange Irish love of conspiracy, where it comes from and what, if anything, can be done about it. Jane Souter is professor in the School of Communications at Dublin City University and director of the university's Institute for Future Media, Democracy and Society. Jane, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much. Really delighted to be here.
Jane, now tell us, what sort of conspiracy theories are we talking about here?
Well,
be as colourful as you can.
So we tested six. Now, the study is funded by our new electoral commission, which is kind of modelled on the Australian electoral commission.
So it should be.
So it should be absolutely excellent. And so they're funding this national election and democracy study. So we had to be reasonably careful about the conspiracies. We couldn't suggest anything too outlandish to test. But there was one, for example, that a small secret group of people is responsible for making all major decisions in world politics. And there was 36% of people believe that. I reckon now post-Epstein, we're probably rapidly moving those numbers up. We did have the establishment is replacing white Irish people with non-white immigrants.
And the replacement theory.
The great replacement theory,
yeah. Yes.
And we had elected officials want more immigration to bring in obedient voters who will vote for them.
Yes.
And then we had a few kind of post-COVID type ones. So viruses and diseases have been deliberately disseminated to infect certain populations.
Yes.
And experiments involving new drugs or technologies are routinely carried out on the public without their knowledge or consent. And then one that was actually the most popular, much to our disgust, I suppose, groups of scientists manipulate, fabricate and suppress evidence in order to deceive the public.
Well, that sounds like half the agenda of the Trump government.
Well, absolutely. And so, yeah, like obviously a lot of this is coming from American social media, and it's because we're part of the Anglosphere, and everybody, you know, if you're somewhere in Europe and you're consuming your social media in German or Danish rather than English, you'll be less exposed to QAnon and Trump type conspiracies.
But it's flowing straight into the market.
Straight into Ireland.
Jane, why do you think Ireland, which is a pretty educated society, as I was suggesting these days anyway, a pretty peaceful society, why do you think the Irish are vulnerable to this sort of crap?
To know, we're just kind of looking at it and we're wondering about it. So part of it is, of course, the whole story of social media and what social media has done to countries all over the world since 2012. And, you know, just the impact of those algorithms and how those algorithms work and how they mess with people's brains. Then COVID, of course, was absolutely huge. You know, people got to spend a lot of time at home. They got to spend a lot of time looking at the internet, going into the wilder corners and being persuaded, especially if, you know, lockdown wasn't suiting them very well, you know. And so I think that's part of it. And, of course, the Irish love a good story. So that might also be part of it. A good yarn, a good story. So we might be susceptible from that point of view as well, I think.
But you were surprised, I think, to find that the same people who were willing to believe these wild ideas trusted government. You know, it wasn't, this did not seem to be growing out of some fundamental distrust.
No, like we have really high levels of trust in government and in institutions. Like the trust in the Electoral Commission, for example, is off the charts. But even trust in political parties, there is a plurality of people, 52% of people who trust political parties, which is very high by European or indeed by OECD standards. It's higher than Australia.
It is higher than Australia. Yeah.
So there's a good deal of trust. Now, if you're very trusting, you are unlikely to believe. So it's more like if you are distrustful, you're much more likely to be a conspiracy theorist. And there are high levels of trust. So there are people who are kind of mid-range trust who absolutely believe in these conspiracies. But if you're very trusting, you're unlikely to believe in the conspiracies.
Can I put another theory to you entirely?
Sure.
These conspiracy theories are things that have to be believed without evidence.
Yeah.
And societies where there is a high level of belief tend to be the societies where there's a high level of belief in conspiracies. Let me throw some figures at you. The United States is a nation of belief. Between 70 and 75% of those polled in the United States say they believe in a God, they have a religion, they have a faith. Ireland, of course, that figure is 86%. The same thing, a willingness to believe, and I don't want to be rude to Christianity at this point, it's too late at night and too long in the afternoon, but you are asked to believe quite a lot without evidence, and a willingness to believe is a characteristic of that. In Australia, of course, poor Australians, only 54% of us have a religion of any kind. And we don't go in, there's a bit of conspiracy theories. I mean, some of what you said is actually familiar from policies of the Conservative opposition in Australia. Mm. They're actually arguing them. But what do you think about this idea that it's not about trust, it's about a willingness to believe without evidence?
But that is really very super interesting. And we actually must test it because we do actually have that data. So we have asked people, you know, do they attend church? How often do they attend? There is actually a question in the Irish election study which allows you to answer daily for your church attendance. And that was actually the variable that most explained the vote against marriage equality and the vote against freeing up abortion. So daily mass attenders were extremely likely to vote against both of those. So that variable has definitely worked in the past to explain things. Now, I'm not sure there's 80-something, I'm not sure where you got the 80-something percent believers. I know
Let me tell you my source.
Okay.
Google.
Hmm.
AI.
Hmm.
Hmm. No, it's probably not good.
So I'm not sure because there's a very high level of people, probably is that number, who will say in the census, oh, I'm Catholic, when they're given a choice between things.
And they're talking cultural.
So they mean that they'll hire a bouncy castle when their child is doing a first communion or, you know, they'll go to...
I've never thought of a correlation between bouncing castles and religion, but Jane,
it's huge.
Going. It's huge, is it?
It's huge. First communion season in Ireland, you have to book a bouncing castle months in advance.
Jesus. Right, yes, yes. Well, perhaps... Could I suggest you go back to your figures and see what sort of correlation there is between...
Yeah, absolutely. And I shall come back to you and let you know.
Please. Please.
Yeah.
But one of the things that your study finds which is so depressing is that correcting people doesn't work.
No.
Where are you with this? I mean, what is your alternative?
Oh, I think the only alternative, like it was starts Sander van der Linde and Stephen Lewandowski and actually John Cook down in Melbourne. I don't know if you've ever had John Cook on here, but, you know, they've did a lot of work in the beginning about actually inoculating people to conspiracy and to misinformation. So the idea is that once it's actually start to spread, it's like a virus, it's too late. It's spreading through. Once you believe one, you believe another. Really hard to get people back once they believe two or three. So what you do is you inoculate them against it and you explain the kind of tactics that conspiracy theorists use. You explain the kind of emotions they try to do. You explain about the simple storylines. And once you do that, you empower people. So then they actually feel smart for spotting the conspiracy rather than feeling smart for believing the conspiracy. So that's worked really well. And I think that's really the only kind of answer. We've done it with quite a few different things, trying to, it's called pre-bunking or inoculation. If you do this kind of pre-bunking, you can really get people thinking. And it's not about specific ones, oh, somebody's going to tell you about COVID. It's like they will use this sort of argument, this sort of fallacy. So there's some fantastic cartoons about the different fallacies that we've run experiments on, and they work really well. Show them to school children, show them to the elderly. Yeah, exactly.
Do you find people who are wrapped up in conspiracy theories are oddly proud of holding to a conspiracy theory in the face of evidence?
Yeah, because it makes them feel smart. The rest of us are the sheeple.
But
we don't understand. They can see the real pattern.
Yep, yep. And we are the fools.
We're the fools. We've been blindsided. The secret elite group have pulled the wool over all of our eyes. We won't open our eyes.
Have you any suggestions for dealing with them?
When it goes that deep, I think it's really, really difficult. Yeah, nobody has actually found a way to do it yet. The only way that we ever found, and actually it goes back a little bit to your initial question about religion, in the Irish marriage equality referendum, we found that one of the most important things in terms of changing older voters, even those who were religious, were grandmothers. And if their grandchildren asked them, so there was a whole campaign by the students' union called Phone Your Granny. And they got all the students to phone their grandmothers all around Ireland, rural and urban. And there was a huge difference in the vote between people of grandmothers and grandfathers afterwards, and the grandmothers were very persuadable by their grandchildren.
Oh, the grandchildren persuaded the grandmothers. They yeah. weren't sort of appealing to the grandmothers for their wisdom.
No, they persuaded them. They rang. So it's phone your granny, and you ring your granny and you say, well, I've got these gay friends and actually they're very lovely and it would be really nice if they could be treated the same as me. And imagine if I was gay, would you really want me not to be able to be married and things? And it was enormously powerful. So grandchildren can actually have, you know, quite a big impact.
What was the counter? What was the counter strategy to phone your granny?
Well, the people who went kind of against marriage equality were just talking about, you know, how it was all wrong and how it was going to be wrong for children. And, you know, if you had two gay parents, you know, the poor child was going to end up in an institution or something. And so it was all about negative feelings. And so what happened is we had a citizen assembly beforehand where the marriage equality people got to really test out their arguments. And one of the most powerful ones they had was when they had two early 20s children of lesbian mothers who came in and started talking about how they wanted, like if one of their mothers went into hospital, they'd be next of kin. But if the other mother went into hospital, they'd be a stranger and they wouldn't be given any information. And you could see everybody in the room was really affected by this. So it became a message of kindness and empathy. And once you actually build messages around kindness and empathy, it's actually really hard for harsher messages to get in. And that was the message of both of those kind of big referendums in Ireland on marriage equality and abortion. They became about empathy and kindness.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Jane Souter, professor in the School of Communications at Dublin City University, about the work that she has been doing on conspiracy theories and the level of belief in them in Ireland. Jane, we take for granted conspiracies theories aren't a good idea, but you've actually looked at this in some detail. What is the harm that conspiracy theories do to politics?
The problem is, if you believe more than one, if you end up with what's called a conspiracy mindset or a conspiracy orientation, so when your first answer to anything that comes up new is that it's most likely a conspiracy of some sort, then the problem is that you're very susceptible to the most populist of messaging. You're much more likely to be in favour of more authoritarian parties. You're much more likely to have lower efficacy, so to not think as highly of your neighbours or to be as trustful of other people. So it's actually very bad, very negative for society as a whole when people, you have too many people with that actual conspiracy mindset. It's very different, of course, to just believing one conspiracy, because any one conspiracy can turn out to be true. It can be right that something, you know, there's a conspiracy, and then you go, oh, actually, that is what happened. You know, COVID did come from a lab in Wuhan.
Some say.
Well, most likely. I think that a lot of people say that, but it was not deliberately leaked, which was the conspiracy, was that it was deliberately leaked.
Yes.
Jeffrey Epstein appears to be at the centre of some sort of horrific global elite abusing children.
A paedophile with enormous power, sorts of borders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, extremely powerful people in the UK being arrested for it in the last week. So, you know, some of these conspiracies are actually true, but the big difference is, if you can accept that, oh, well, that's true, that did happen. But it doesn't mean that the next thing you hear, you jump to, that is going to actually be a conspiracy as well.
I'm fascinated by what you said a moment ago, that people who believe in conspiracies want authoritarian governments. Why?
They're much more likely, because they think there is some, they think that ordinary, this is in ordinary democratic countries, because they think the ordinary political system is only answering to rich people. So the favourite kind of thing for them to say in terms of what we call efficacy questions is that politicians govern in favour of the rich. So they believe that the ordinary politicians are governing in favour of the rich and not in favour of themselves. So that presumably is a lot of what led to Trump. It's some of what led to Brexit. You know, so very cynical actors who have authoritarian tendencies can take advantage of that.
Though I would look at that argument and think it was just crazy, because if you want an authoritarian government, it's going to be run by the rich.
Yeah, and by the AI overlords.
Ah. Now, tell me, Jane, do you believe that there are AI overlords that are now governing our lives?
Well, I do to some extent, or who would like to. Who would like to? I think I might have heard Sam Altman saying the other day that it takes a lot of energy to train a human, comparing humans to his AI machines.
We're going to have to be very careful in this area, because, of course, we could have AI-generated conspiracy theories, couldn't we?
We have a lot of AI-generated conspiracy theories.
Already?
A lot of a lot of material, like disinformation, fake images, deepfakes, all of that sort of thing, which is generated by AI all of the time. And then that, of course, will interact with the algorithms and push it more towards. So that's why it's so interesting that Australia, for example, has banned social media for the under 16s. I'd be super interested to, anybody I've talked to here says, oh, it's too early to say. We can't tell whether it's worked, hasn't worked, is a mad idea, is not. But it'll be interesting to see what's happened to teenagers' mental health in Australia in a few years.
Yeah, take a bit of time. But Jane, of course, what AI, as you say, can provide is very, very compelling evidence for the wildest conspiracy theories.
But it can also be used to debunk them. So there was a really cool paper that was published in Science 2 weeks ago by a group of researchers in Europe who found that you could actually have a discussion with AI and it could actually lead you away from the conspiracy. So depending on how you prompt the AI, but they were able to prompt the AI with a group and actually decrease conspiracy belief through interaction with this AI chatbot. So it's all about the prompting. It's all about the guardrails. I don't think I'd hold out much hope of Grok debunking many conspiracy theories, but, you know, depending on what you do, some of the others may or may not. You know, there certainly is evidence that they can be prompted to be quite effective debunkers of conspiracy.
Jane, back to Irish politics. How do you see the political future of the country? I mean, is it immune from populism, or could a populist figure emerge, draw on these fears of the great replacement theory and all of that sort of stuff? Or is Ireland just too canny for that?
No, like, we do have a lot of people with very populist attitudes. There's a lot of anti-migration sentiment. There have been protests outside of refugee accommodation and asylum seeker accommodation and so on. But one of the things is we have an electoral system, PRSTV, which is used in quite a few different types of elections in Australia as well. But PRSTV tends to allow you to produce quite a lot of independence. And so we...
What do those initials stand for?
Single transferable vote. So it's your proportional representative voting system. It's in Victoria and Tasmania in the Senate.
Yes. We have that everywhere. Yeah.
So that electoral system actually allows you to produce quite a large number of independents. So there's a lot of independents in the Irish Parliament, in the Irish Dáil. And quite a lot of them would be quite far out to the right. But most are quite localist, so they don't really have, there hasn't been a charismatic leader, and they're not really part of an independent, like of a party. You know, they kind of band together in, you know, grouping called Independent Ireland or Independence for Change or, you know, these kind of things. But they don't have a party structure around them. So that kind of, it seems to act as some sort of bulwark against you know, having a populist radical right party. Though I did see that the DUP in Northern Ireland were trying to suggest that they were trying to talk to one of the two centrist parties to make them into a populist radical right. But
political chat. Jane, the worst conspiracy theory widely held in Ireland is which one?
I think it's actually the most widely held one, it's the second most widely held, which is groups of scientists manipulate and fabricate and suppress evidence to deceive the public. So if you actually believe that, that can undermine all of medicine, all of education, the university, a lot of what we know. And so I think building on that is actually quite dangerous for the society.
How are vaccination rates going in Ireland?
They're actually okay. Like, they're much higher than in Britain and so on, because they weren't actually politicised in the same way. But COVID vaccines now are even quite low. And even among the medical staff, like the nursing staff, it's less than 50% of them getting COVID vaccines now.
Good heavens. Get down there. Get your jab.
Get your jab, yeah.
Jane, thank you for talking to us on Late Night Live.
Oh, it's delightful to be here. Thank you so much.
I've been talking to Jane Souter, Professor in the School of Communications at Dublin City University and Director of the University's Institute for Future Media, Democracy and Society, about her study of belief in conspiracies in Ireland. This is Late Night Live.